In 1987, Atlanta was introduced to Clark Howard with a one-hour-a-day talk show on WGST called Cover Your Assets. In the 20 years since then, he's taught an awful lot of people in Atlanta and across the country how to handle their money, how to avoid ripoffs, how to save and invest for the future, how to spend less than they earn. It's a jungle out there for consumers, and Clark has the GPS system to help us all get through it. I've had the privilege of writing 8 books with Clark. Thanks to him, I can say my name has appeared on the New York Times bestseller list. People always ask me, is Clark really as nice a person as he seems on the air? And the answer is absolutely yes. In a moment, you'll see for yourself. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Clark Howard.
Good morning, and thank you for adjusting your schedule today for me so that I could go earn a living on the radio this afternoon. And speaking of radio, all my bosses are here from radio to find out if it really is true that Neil Bortz is running for mayor of Atlanta. I'm not sure about that, but Mary Norwood is here, who is running for mayor of Atlanta. Maybe. Maybe. There are other people who maybe would be running for mayor. And I wanted to talk for a few minutes about what, to me, are the challenges of the city of Atlanta and the metro area. Now, we all know the problems in the metro area, so I'm going to talk about that last, to talk more about solutions with that last. But for those of you, how many people actually are residents of the city of Atlanta in here? Wow, that's a lot. I got to tell you something. I did an event for the station in Marietta, and Sean Hannity was there with me, and he said, this guy ought to be mayor of Atlanta. And people were cheering and applauding and all that. And then I said, wait a second, Sean. How many people in here actually live in the city of Atlanta? There were 3. So most of the time, if you think about Atlanta, think how weird this is. Out of the population of the metro area, do you know only 8% of the population lives inside the city of Atlanta? 92% of people live in the suburbs of what we generally refer to as Metro Atlanta. The city is like a microscopic thing in the metro area, but it's also the heart and soul. And I'm a native. I remember when this city, really all that existed, was right in this town. And I remember as a kid, the first office park that was ever built in Atlanta was way, 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 way far out of town. And this suburban office park was so far out, people thought the people who built it were absolutely out of their minds. It was all the way out at North Druid Hills Road. And so we've changed a lot since then, and now we're, I think, 27 metro counties make up the statistical measurement area for Atlanta, 5.2 million people approximately. And the city of Atlanta is 400 and something thousand of that. But the city, again, is so vital, and what happens in the city really does affect the whole metro area. And I'd like to start with one area that has been a cause of disruption in our metro area for so long, and that's the schools. The schools in the city of Atlanta are a joke, but it's a bad joke, because do you know that we spend in the city of Atlanta, between local and federal and whatever state dollars come in, we spend between $11,000 and $12,000 a year per child, which is just about the highest in the whole United States. Of all the thousands of school districts in the United States, we're usually in the top 10 in the wrong category, how much we spend per kid. And then you look the other way, the results, and the results are awful. I saw in the Atlanta Constitution, I saw the test results of the elementary, middle, and high schools in the city of Atlanta. And it is shocking. We are graduating kids who can't even do the most basic of academic functions that normally kids would know before they finished elementary school. Not to mention the dropout rate. And if you want to get at the core of making a difference in what happens in the city of Atlanta, we have got to give children of all income levels, and especially the poor children, a chance to succeed. But the mentality and the culture in City of Atlanta government and the schools in the City of Atlanta for so long had been built on providing employment to the people who work for the city and for the school board. And they're two entirely separate operations the way Atlanta is set up now. And the problem is that the dollars, those huge dollars that we're being taxed for, those dollars are not making it to the kids or to the classrooms. Do you know that most schools in the city of Atlanta, if we went right now, if you went to the bathroom in most schools in a city of Atlanta school, there would be no toilet paper and no soap. Now, come on. There is no excuse for that. If you think about something as basic as not having toilet paper or soap in the bathrooms, what are the chances you're actually educating any of those kids? And it's not happening. And many times with the poorer children in the city, they may be from very difficult circumstances in their homes. Maybe they're being raised by an aunt, a grandma, maybe who knows who is raising a child. They may have spent time in foster care, out of foster care, back with a family member. And so you can't expect the schools to fix everything. But I think that we need to basically blow up the way we do schooling in the city of Atlanta if we're going to give people who are of lower income levels a chance to succeed. And there's a direct tie-in to what happens with crime rates. You know, if a kid hits the streets without feeling hope or opportunity, that is a child who becomes a candidate for committing crimes. And so if I could wave a magic wand, if I was emperor of the city of Atlanta, what I would do is I would do what has happened in other cities, and that is you set up two school boards, one that runs the traditional public schools, and you set up a second one that establishes charter schools and gift certificates, we're known as vouchers, so that kids can go to private schools. And if you do that, you suddenly create the era of competition that we need in the city. Do you know right now there are five public elementary schools in the city of Atlanta that are bursting at the seams? They cannot handle all the kids walking in the door. And they're all in a very small area in Buckhead. And these schools have very active PTAs that put a lot of money into them. And they are run kind of like private schools. And they're feeders for the private high schools in Atlanta. And these are public schools. And they cannot handle the enrollments that are coming in. And parents will pay more to live in the districts for those five schools just to have a house in that area. Obviously, it is possible to run public schools that will provide a good education. But this is like a little, you know, little piece of sand in the desert, that we have these five schools that do a great job and the kids overwhelmingly go on to succeed and go to college and have full productive economic lives. And so when I look at what frustrates me in Atlanta, it is this culture of the fact that, oh, I got a job with the school board and I'm working in some office doing who knows what. We need to empty out those offices and put two teachers per classroom in every low-income school. Now, I've got a daughter, because we can afford it, I have an 8-year-old who goes to Westminster, which is a very snobby private school on West Paces Ferry Road, and she's in a classroom with 17 kids and two teachers. And they're not one's not a teaching assistant, they are both full teachers. We have more than enough resources in what we have in terms of headcount at the Atlanta Public Schools, that every classroom could easily have two teachers in smaller classroom sizes. And I do think it starts with the schools. Second thing is the thing I mentioned, crime. All right, now crime and homelessness. Did everybody park here today, or anybody walk any distance to get here today? Anybody walk? How many homeless people did you see today? How many were asking you for money? Anybody asking for money? Okay, there's a difference downtown. If you come down here at 6 o'clock, you'll be asked for money. pretty aggressively. And the thing with homelessness in Atlanta, and we're not alone in that in the country, is that we have a lot of people who are homeless for any of a number of reasons. And there's not like, it's not like a monolith, like there's one kind of homeless person. There are people who have mental illness. There are people who have drug or alcohol problems. Then there are people who are homeless just because of economic circumstances. But most fall in those first three categories. I think we need to do some serious, tough love with the homeless problem in the city of Atlanta if we're going to attract more people back to the center city and more businesses back to the center city, not fleeing to Lenox or Buckhead or Midtown. And we actually have to put real money into diversion programs where we deal with people's mental illnesses, we deal with people's alcoholism, and we deal with drug addiction problems. And it requires real time, real follow-through, and real dough. And then there are already programs available to deal with the relatively small number of homeless people who are economically homeless. But you know what's weird is it costs a lot more money to put somebody in the city jail. Well, we don't have a city jail anymore, do we? We send them to the county? City jail, but okay. So, but to send them to jail or ultimately to prison costs a fortune. You can treat somebody's addiction or mental illness so much cheaper if we really put the resources behind it. And right now we ask the police to do something impossible. You know, we have them write some kind of ticket or write somebody up or lock them up for some kind of public indecency or something like that. And it's like a revolving door. They end up in jail for a couple of days, 4 days, 5 days. Judge lets them go on their own recognizance. They're back out on the street doing the same thing. We have to improve the sense of quality of life. My wife, she's an actress, and she was doing a job downtown and was having to walk two blocks from our city hall and was totally accosted by a group of homeless people. She will not now come downtown by herself. And nobody hurt her. They just created fear in her. And my wife's 5'10". She's pretty tough. But she's afraid now to come down here on her own. And that is something that we have to fix. Not for my wife, but for the economic vitality, ultimately, of the central city. Because, you know, we got a lot of office towers down here. Do you know the empty square footage in downtown Atlanta would just stun you? And building after building after building downtown. Georgia State's helped some. Thank you, those of you who work for Georgia State. The university's helped by filling some of that square footage. But we've got a confidence issue and a reality that we have to deal with. I also want to do something about putting the police back to doing just police work. Because right now, with all our traffic stuff going on in Atlanta, all the accidents, the police have an enormous amount of their time diverted to writing traffic, accident reports. And what I would like to do is what's happened very successfully in other communities. I'd like to see the city set up PSOs, public safety officers, which are people who only do traffic enforcement and write tickets and write accident reports, and the police just do policing. We also need to pay our police more so that we don't have the soft corruption we have right now in Atlanta, where if a neighborhood will pay a private policing service that actually is just police officers who are getting a separate check, pay them to patrol neighborhoods, and then other neighborhoods that can't afford to pay don't get patrolled. And if you go all around Buckhead, there will be these signs about the neighborhood association, you know, security patrol, blah, blah, blah. And those are all police officers, supposedly off duty, who are there patrolling those neighborhoods. And then a huge swath of Atlanta has basically no police protection at all. And we just gotta get that taken care of and get the officers out there. And in neighborhoods where people are afraid, we need to get that back under control. And I think that's very, very important for our future. Again, quality of life things. As far as government, there's something I will never understand. I travel all over the country, and airport after airport after airport I go to, Wi-Fi is free. Now that you can just pop your computer open, And people are annoyed when they go to an airport now and there's not free Wi-Fi. Do you know what it costs to web surf in the Atlanta airport? Is it 20 an hour? Okay, the deal was, and this is one of those things about the soft corruption in Atlanta, somehow this contract was let at $12.5 million to do Wi-Fi in the airport. You could Wi-Fi a big portion of the entire city of Atlanta for what that costs supposedly to Wi-Fi the Atlanta airport. And that kind of thing, that underlying culture that the city of Atlanta is about who you hand contracts out to, that has got to stop, because the taxpayers are paying a big burden to make those things happen and to line the pockets of key chosen people. And we can't have that. It's not a productive way to run a government, because the purpose of government is to provide for citizens, for services that are best left to government. And speaking of that, we do a lot of things that should not be government functions. How many of you live in suburban counties where you have private garbage pickup? And there are lots of jurisdictions where you have competition with private haulers fighting for your business. City of Atlanta, you want garbage pickup? It comes from the city, whether they come or not. And the cost of running it is gigantic. And service after service after service with the city. I think what we should be about is creating competition. Indianapolis is the city held up as the one that has done the best job by reducing government spending by about 30% by creating competition for 70 different city services. And we have never been about creating the most efficient government we could have and reducing the cost to people. So I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit in the city of Atlanta to reduce the tax burden on people. And I'm a big fan of spending caps, because what happens in government is that when tax collections are good, government has an ability somehow to spend every last dollar. And then when times get tough, it seems the employees are never the ones who suffer. Somehow services to the public get cut. And I am a big fan at all levels of government of having strict spending caps that are based on population growth and inflation. That you cannot grow the size of government any larger than those two things in combination. And that would go a long way to helping the city. For all of you who live outside the city limits, obviously the number one thing people always talk to me about is traffic. And Krista, my executive producer, who's right over there, hi Krista, wait. Krista can tell you all kinds of jokes about the way I am when I get stuck in traffic, and I just go berserk. And I don't know how people do it every day. I had a speech last night in Roswell, and I think I aged 3 years going from Midtown to Roswell last night, and I was told it was not a bad traffic night. And so we in the city have a lot. When I say city now, I mean the whole metro area. We have a lot we need to do about coordinating how we handle traffic and transportation of all modes. Right now we have more government in Georgia per population than any other state in the country. Texas is the only other one that works as hard at having too many governments. We have 159 counties in a state that would be more appropriate to maybe have 20 based on our geographic size. And so it's very hard to get even all the government people in the same room to even talk about transportation. Now this again goes to a different office, to the governor's office, but Roy Barnes, our past governor, was close to the right path when he was able to get something through the legislature called GRETA, Georgia Regional Transportation Authority. And the idea was to overcome all the local jurisdictions, recognize that no matter where you live in the metro area, you drive over across multiple lines through your day. If you take any kind of public transportation, you cross multiple government lines. But as a metro area, we have the same need, which is to have coordinated transportation. And if we are ever going to get our arms around it, we have to have a nearly all-powerful transportation authority for the metro counties, for the 27 counties. and get it out of the hands of the local county commission, the city councils, and deal with the fact that we have a community-wide problem. You know what's funny? If you ask somebody who's moved to Metro Atlanta recently, you ask them, where do you live? The only thing they know is based on whatever the U.S. Postal Service said their mailing address was. Like, there are lots of people who live in Cobb County in zip 30339 that's an Atlanta zip. Everybody around the Galleria, Cumberland Mall, Circle 75 Parkway, they all think they're in the city of Atlanta, but let me tell you, they're on the other side of the river in Cobb County. People don't get it who come here from somewhere else. This idea that we have all these different governments, all these different police departments, all these different fire departments, and that probably is something that's too far gone to do something about. But I think there's complete consensus in the entire metro area that traffic stinks. And I think that creates the political will for us to create a taxing authority that would make the metro-wide traffic decisions. And one beef of mine, how in 2007 can we not have red lights that are coordinated? Now, for those of you who moved to Atlanta from somewhere else, you may wonder, why do we call them red lights here instead of traffic lights? Because our lights inevitably are always red. And so that's another thing that is so easy to deal with. The computer technology exists today to very easily coordinate flow with traffic lights. And if you ever go around that area you work in, Mark, what do they call those? Piedmont Center, is that what all those buildings are just north of you? Piedmont Road, right at the Buckhead Loop, going up to Roswell Road. Okay, this is so funny. How dysfunctional are we that in the afternoon, every 50 feet, there's another police officer stopping traffic? That goes back to the core that we're not using the technology that's available in 2007. So one of the things I would do is I would turn over every intersection in Metro Atlanta to a private enterprise solution to get the lights working right. And if you did that, think what a difference it would make in your day and your life if you were not at a light that you look and there's not another car around you going either direction, and you got to sit there and wait, waste fuel, cause pollution, and sit in that mess. And it can be done, because if you go to Utah or you go to Arizona, the lights are what are called smart lights. If there's no traffic coming from a side street, the light doesn't change and you keep your green. Or if a car comes from the side street, the light changes. And that is pretty basic and pretty simple. And it's because of our mess of too many governments that we have that problem. The last thing is, you know, water restrictions are being announced again today to tighten up our water use. And we use an inordinate amount of water in Atlanta. And when I say Atlanta again, I mean Metro Atlanta, for our population base. And part of it's because the big thing here is to have green lawns. Well, you may be aware there's a technology used in other states where the water that you have used in your house is partially treated and then is used for lawn service, for watering lawns, for any kind of green space. And so you're not taking what they call potable water. Yeah, the water you drink, they're not taking water to that standard. They're taking the water that was already at that standard, cleaning it enough that it can be used for big water consumption, which is green space, because drinking is not a big consumption of water. It's the other things. And these are the kind of things that require a real forethought. And we really have to think through, when we have this problem, how much water are we going to give Alabama? How much water are we going to give Florida? What are we going to send south to Columbus? All we're talking about is how we navigate shortage instead of looking for solutions that would eliminate shortage. And I think that's something that we need to be about and need to be talking about as a metro area. And I want to stop there and answer questions on Neil's campaign or anything else you would like to ask right now.
We didn't fill out a note card, so I'll just take the microphone around, or if you want to shout, whatever works better.
Clark, your credibility is so strong. Could you get the ball rolling on everything you said by perhaps Cynthia Tucker? Column, can you hear me? If you put a guest column in the AJC analyzing strengths and weaknesses of Atlanta, people really do listen to you.
Well, you're kind, and I don't know that Cynthia Tucker is interested in my opinion, but if she was, I'd be happy to do something like that.
Okay, I've got a couple of cards now. Clark, why don't you run for the school board or president of the school board instead of mayor?
Well, I want you to know first, the folks over at this table, especially the management types, want me to run for nothing except the next ratings book and radio. But I've thought about the school board as a way to potentially make a difference. And one of the problems is, remember I said I had a kid in private school? That doesn't go over well campaigning for the public school board when you have a kid in private school. I have a child who's now in college at Georgia College in Milledgeville, who went to public school for 6 years and then finished at private school. But really, people expect anybody running for the school board to be eating their own cooking and to have their kids in public school. And I'm not going for something that would be for me to do something that would harm my child potentially by taking her from a private school and putting her in public school just so I could run for some office.
What's the first major step you would take if you were mayor of Atlanta?
That's a good question. You know, as someone, Mary Norwood here has been, how long have you been on the council? Mary's had 6 years understanding how everything works. I assume that if I were to run for mayor and if I were to win, that the first thing that would happen was I wouldn't have any clue what I was doing. I mean, if you look at Bloomberg, who came as a non-traditional candidate, as kind of an independent sort to become mayor of New York, you look at Schwarzenegger in California, they both came in with a complete clean slate and really bombed in the first year of their time in office. And I assumed that I would be completely flailing at first, too, because you just got to understand where the bodies are buried. And you don't get that as an outsider. You got to be there for a while, make your mistakes, and then be in a position to do something. I think it would be, I don't know any other word for it, I think it would be arrogant for me to think, as someone who's never been involved in city government, to walk in on the first day and really have a clue how I would implement the things I would want to do. The one, you do set some concrete things, though, and you, just as Mayor Franklin did with the pothole posse thing, that, you know, the city was so demoralized, and she said, I'm going to do something that will be visible and tangible. If there was one thing that I would do that would be the symbolic thing, it would be, and I think over time it would be very positive, it would be creating the PSOs, public safety officers, and getting the police back out fighting crime. But have no illusions, if an outsider like me gets elected, it would be a while before there would be any chance of me being effective.
What are your views on the current real estate market and what consumers will do with home buying dollars in the next few years?
The housing market in Atlanta is kind of weird because we never had the party that people had in Florida and California, Arizona, Nevada, where the values were ratcheting up more per month than we do per year. But we unfortunately are having the hangover that they had without ever having the champagne. And the reason we never bubbled up, but the reason that we have the hangover headache is that one of the great things about Metro Atlanta is there's almost no barriers to growth. And there was more housing stock built here than the marketplace needed. And so in order to get those houses occupied, lending standards here slipped and slipped and slipped like the rest of the country. And we have too many houses right now. It's going to take us several years to work off the excess inventory and get back to where housing prices are not sluggish. And by the way, if you're interested in a condo, by next year, we are going to have deals galore on condos. If you drive up and down the Peachtree Road spine, you'll see how many new condos aren't just signs in front. They're actually building these places with no customers to fill them. And so there will be great opportunity. I was by a condo conversion yesterday on Bolton Road. You know where Bolton Road is?
Yeah.
And they had been trying for a year and a half to sell those condos, the developer, and they flipped it back to apartments. And we're going to see some reverse conversions in Metro Atlanta of existing stock. And we'll even see some condos that are coming out of the ground that will, at least for the next several years, be reconverted back to apartments, because we can't support the number of housing units in Metro Atlanta. But we have an economy that through the years has shown incredible resilience and growth. We got the population growth here, we got the jobs, we'll absorb the housing stock. You just don't want to be a seller in the next 2.5 years. Yes, sir. Well, I'm a native Atlantan, and the black people of Metro Atlanta earned the unhappiness they had here. You know, we have a system. I want to tell you something. Andrew Young is a man that I know personally. I worked in his campaign in 1970 and 72 when he lost for Congress, I think in 70, and was elected in 72, if I remember right. And he is one of the most articulate, fair, bright, talented people I have ever known. And when he ran for governor of Georgia, he got virtually no votes in the Democratic primary. We have not been colorblind in the state of Georgia. And as a result, as a reaction to that, I think that black people in Atlanta and in the metro area have said, we have this position. We can't have the others. Our governor of Georgia is the mayor of Atlanta. That's the closest we're ever going to be. And we're going to hold on to that office. I mean, Shirley Franklin gave a speech recently to that effect, that this was their office, meaning for African Americans. And so that happened because of racism, plain and simple. That if one of the most talented people I've ever seen couldn't even get out of the Democratic primary and be the Democratic candidate for statewide office, that tells you that we have a lot of people who wear race-colored glasses in Georgia. And I think that that is embedded in the feelings of people in Atlanta, that I don't belong as potentially mayor, and Mary Norwood, if she runs, is not qualified to be mayor because of our skin color. And I think that there's a point at which we, I hope, as a state, will be one that judges people based on the quality that they bring to the table rather than the skin color they bring to the table. And it's an unknown, in my mind, if I ran for mayor or Mary runs for mayor, what people's reaction will be who are black to either of us being on, you know, being the candidates for mayor. And especially in my case, because I don't know in terms of Mary, but with the kind of changes I want to bring about, it's kind of gasoline on a fire with the stuff that you deal with. And yes, you really have to deal with the racial question head on. We've done too much in Atlanta where we use code terms and code words, like buckhead means white, and we got to get past that stuff. Yes, ma'am. Well, the ARC is really more about a bear hug. Now, let's all get along. And it doesn't have what it needs in order to really make a difference. And it's got to be targeted. You know, I mentioned the traffic. if you create a taxing authority that deals with traffic issues, the power in government ultimately follows the source of the funds. And so you have to create a transportation authority that would have the power. You know, the ARC, how long have they been struggling to come up with a transportation plan for Metro Atlanta? Is it since back at the time Moses brought the tablets down or something? I mean, it's forever. And they can't ever get out of their own way because you got too many people with too many competing agendas. And that's why you have to have that central authority to make a difference.
Clark, this question is, how do you get all these small governments to work together, change their mentality instead of what's in it for my town to what's in it for all of us? What kind of incentive programs need to be put into place?
That's a great question. The way they've done it in rural areas is it only happens in economic hard times. That counties around the state, because we have all these counties that have like nobody in them. They got a lot of trees and that's about it. And these counties can't effectively function. So they do service consolidations. And it has to be a point where people start to feel the burden of either not being able to deliver services or the citizens feel the burden of the tax levels before you get to a point where people are realistic about doing consolidations. And if you go around rural Georgia, which we live in Florida much of the summer, and we drive through southeast Georgia, and you'll see these, it's funny, you'll go through a county seat, and there'll be a sign for a school board, and it'll be like five or six names of all these counties and cities that have consolidated their schools, and then their consolidated services. And so it's one of those things about us as Americans, things have to get bad enough before we decide we're going to make them better, which is why I think we're getting close to that point with traffic. And so with delivering services, we would have to have a pretty severe economic slump before you'd have people crying uncle and saying, well, let's work with those people over here or over there.
Ken?
Yes, sir.
What's your views on a great possible situation?
You don't run by party for mayor of Atlanta. I don't have a party, which is a big problem. I'll tell you, I voted for, let me see, I'll give you the president stuff, because people always like to know who somebody voted for president. In 92, I voted for Bill Clinton. In 96, I voted for Bob Dole. In 2000, 2004, I voted Libertarian in both presidential races. I mean, I am all over the place politically. And I feel loyalty to an individual, not a party. I remember when the rumors first started surfacing about mayor, there was a story that I think Creative Loafing did that was talking about, okay, how can this guy give money to Johnny Isaacson, which I did, and give money to the former city council president, who is a lesbian, and you've got two complete ends of the spectrum. And through time, I have given money to any of a number of people because I believe in that individual. And I don't get the whole party deal. You know, it's my party, and I don't care who's in, I'm going to hold my nose, and I'm going to support that person. I've never been able to identify with that. So as far as party, I come to you without one. And the second thing you asked was,
Grady.
Oh, Grady. That's why I forgot that. I didn't want to talk about it. Grady is the most unusual place, and its role in the metro area has been most unusual. If you are burned severely in a fire, I don't care where you live in North Georgia, you want to be at Grady. If you have been shot, I don't care where you are in Metro Atlanta, you want to be at Grady. If you have been in a severe car wreck, you want to be at Grady. And they are fantastic at providing services in severe emergencies. They also provide a relief role that none of the other hospitals in Metro Atlanta want to deal with. And federal funding formulas have changed, and we have a huge number of uninsureds, so everybody treats Grady like a hot potato. The reading I've done about it, and I have no firsthand knowledge here, so I know only from what I've read, is that there's some people who believe that by creating a nonprofit organization that you will create a more efficient operation. And that's my natural built-in bias. So you know how you read something and you say, oh, that confirms what I think. So my natural bias is that Grady would be better run by a private nonprofit. But I don't, and without really digging in firsthand, I'd say that I'm only making an uneducated guess on that.
Yeah, that's all the time we have. I'm sorry, we're going to...
Did you have the last question? You were all anxious to ask a question. I would make sure that every client has a TiVo that will skip through every commercial for Rooms to Go, Best Buy, and everybody else who's putting them in financial Armageddon by getting people to take on enormous amounts of debt for things on the no plans. You know, no down payment, no interest, and no payment. So somebody told me yesterday till 2012 for Rooms to Go now. And so people, there's a trick people play in their brains that they, even if they don't have money, they can have all these things because it's free. And so it's the spending side. You know, you're dedicated as a financial planner to what people do with the money they don't spend. I'm dedicated to trying to get people not to spend the money in the first place. And I think that's the basic fundamental, because if you don't deal with that, you don't really have any money to invest. And thank you very much for coming in at different times.
Okay, we're going to give away a couple of books, and Chris is going to draw the name from the bowl.
Yes, this is a pack of three books. By the way, we're almost late today because Clark drove around looking for a broken parking meter. I'm not kidding. All right, and the winner is Veronica Burnett from Mass Mutual Financial Group. Are you here, Veronica? There she is.
Clark, thank you so much for coming today. The Atlanta Press Club is going to make a donation to Habitat for Humanity to express our appreciation. Great. Excellent. Thank you all for coming. We hope to see you at our next Newsmaker Luncheon. We'll have Dr. Julie Gerberding, the chief of the Centers for Disease Control, on October 24th. Governor Sonny Perdue is going to be here November 22nd. And John Huey, the editor-in-chief of Time, Inc., on November 16th. We keep having great Newsmaker programs. Thank you for that, Paula. Don't forget to become a member of the Atlanta Press Club or to renew your membership if you're already a member. For more information on upcoming events or membership benefits, please visit our website at atlantapressclub.org. That concludes our program.